It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Conner. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up amid national protests in Venezuela, the Trump administration is urging people in that country to turn away from President Nicolas Maduro and support the leader of the opposition. We'll discuss the unrest there and how it could affect the region and the U.S.
First, if you've got a problem, there's likely a self-help book on the market with a solution. Change your life, change your job, find a partner, solve your money problems, get rich quick, have more friends, be a better cook. The list goes on.
But if you don't want to spend your time reading something, if it might not work. Sure, we like to read self-help, but just how much do we like actually trying some of its scary suggestions or sticking to the motivational ideas for longer than a week?
Our next guest spent more than a year reading a self-help book each month and following its suggestions to see if it could change her life, from Seven Habits of Highly Effective People to The Power of Now.
Marianne Power is a journalist and writer. Her new book is called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out If Self-Help Really Can Change Her Life. Marianne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I think, first of all, this concept is a very clever idea, and it seems like you thought it was too. But there came a point where you realized this was going to be a bit more than just a clever project and actually quite difficult. What point did you start to realize that was the case?
It was probably about 4 months in. So, yeah, initially, I have always read self-help books, and friends would laugh at me because I was a terrible advert for books with names like How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And they would laugh at me. But I always thought they would work if I actually did what they told me to do. And so I had this really neat and clever idea that I would spend a year doing all the things the self-help books told me to do. And the plan was by the end of the year, I would become a perfect person. And it was about 4 months in that I started to really realize this was going to be a much bigger, messier undertaking than I'd realized.
I think for all of us, it feels like we can get kind of embarrassed about reading self-help books. Like, you know, maybe they're too corny or maybe they're too sentimental. How did you feel about self-help books before the project started? Did you feel like at first it was a silly thing to do? Did it change?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was embarrassed about my self-help habits. I'd kind of hide them under the bed, these books that I was buying. And yeah, because they're kind of naff and it's not considered clever reading. I had a degree in English literature, so I kept my impressive books up on the bookshelf and the self-help books were hidden under the bed. But they were the ones that I was reading the most.
And as you started on this journey, did it become less silly or did you think it's still kind of silly, but I want to take this a little bit more seriously?
No, very, very quickly. I used to be able to joke about the books that I was reading and my friends would tease me and I would be able to laugh. But no, quite quickly into this project, I stopped seeing it as funny. It became a really very serious endeavor for me. And I became very defensive if anyone wanted to tease me about the books or the crazy things I was doing. I started taking it very seriously.
There's so many self-help books out there on the market, and there's new ones being published all the time. Why do you think we, as not only, you know, no matter what country you live in or just around the world, why are we so obsessed with self-improvement?
Well, there's a theory that we've always, as humans, needed help on how to navigate life. It's why philosophy existed. It's a big part of what religion can give people, or it would be that you would go to a village elder. And I just think the way that modern life is set up today, where a lot of us are living on our own, not many of us are in contact with, you know, across different generations, if we're living a kind of a more isolated city life. And self-help books seem to be the place that we go to when we're feeling a bit lost.
Now, the book you started with is called Fear the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers. And as per her instructions, you ended up making a list of things that scared you, and you did those things one by one. Can you tell us some of the things that made your list?
Oh, the list was awful. So I started off small with things like opening bank statements and answering the telephone. And then my friends told me quite quickly that that was not going to cut it. I'd have to do bigger and better than that. So I on the list put stand-up comedy and naked modeling for an art class and jumping out of a plane. And then my flatmate at the time said that I should chat up a guy on the London Underground, which anyone who's been to London knows you're not really even meant to look at people on public transport, let alone talk to them. So that was my list, and I did it all.
Marianne Power is a journalist and writer. Her new book is called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out If Self-Help Really Can Change Her Life. Marianne, what was your process of creating the list like? Did you take the most scariest things first and put that at the top of the list, or did you kind of mix it up a little bit?
No, I started small, and then stand-up comedy was actually the most terrifying thing I could think of doing. So I left the stand-up comedy until the very end of the month, because I just, every time I saw that on the list, as each day passed in January, I saw stand-up comedy on the list and my stomach would flip. But in the end, on the final weekend of January, I did it. I did an open mic night in a bar in London and managed to get a few laughs, and I felt like a total hero afterwards.
You know, as someone who is scared to death of jumping out of an airplane, and I know people who have actually done it, what was that like?
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. So apparently that's a real, it's a 50-50 thing. You either love it or you hate it. And I thought I was going to die. No joke. You're not meant to be falling through the sky. This is not a natural experience. So as soon as I landed on the ground, the first thing I said is, I am never doing that again.
Did any of these scary experiences, like jumping out of an airplane or doing stand-up comedy, after doing it, did it change you in any way?
Yeah, the stand-up comedy was honestly one of the proudest moments of my life, because I was so petrified about doing it. And the fact that I not only had the courage to do it, but that it actually went well and people laughed. And one man came up to me afterwards and said, you're a natural at that. And that shocked me so much. And it made me realize in that moment that actually we're probably capable of a lot of things that we never really get the chance to find out about because we're scared, or, you know, you make your certain life decisions and you just don't really make yourself do uncomfortable things. So that stayed with me, that feeling of, oh my God, I can do an awful lot more than I think I can.
No, I can imagine that, you know, doing stand-up comedy, one of the things that people talk about all the time is that, you know, stand-up comedy or getting in front of a crowd is probably the toughest thing that you could possibly do. And to do it well must have been a very rewarding experience.
It was a huge shock. I was, you know, even my mom couldn't believe that it had gone well. I was in shock that people had laughed. And yeah, I will never forget that feeling of going home that night, just thinking, oh my goodness, you know, the world is not how I thought it was.
You know, you also tried this thing called rejection therapy. And basically, you were trying to do things that would likely be met with a no. And it kind of seems like a terrifying plan to encourage someone encourage some interesting social interaction. You did this 1 month, but you even extended it.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your time trying this out?
Oh, it was painful. So the idea behind rejection therapy is that you have to be rejected by another human being once every single day. And the theory behind that is that many of us live in fear of rejection, and it stops us from going after lots of things that we want in life, whether that's a promotion or, you know, asking someone out that we like. And we kind of always hold ourselves back because we kind of think, oh, what's the point? They're going to say no, or I'm not good enough for that job. Rejection therapy is meant to make you get so used to the feeling of being rejected, that you then become braver in everyday life. But my gosh, it was so hard. I started off small with just smiling at strangers on the street. And if they didn't smile back at me, that counted as a rejection. And then I moved up to saying hello and trying to start conversations with people on the street. And when they looked at me like I was crazy, that counted as a rejection. And then just things like asking for a free coffee at my local coffee shop, and then the man explaining to me how bad business was, and then I felt terrible and I ended up leaving a huge tip to compensate for the guilt. So it was deeply uncomfortable, but ultimately rewarding. I ended up then stopping for about 2 weeks. I didn't do any rejection, which is why then I extended it for an extra month. And once I'd got through the discomfort of it, actually some really beautiful encounters came from it. So a silly thing, I was walking past a basketball court and there were these teenagers playing basketball, and I've never played basketball before. It wasn't something we did at school. And anytime I walk past a court like that, I think, oh, I'd love to have a go at that. So I just went in and asked if I could join them. And they were kind of quite intimidating looking teens. And I was expecting them to just go, no. And they didn't. They were absolute sweethearts. They gave me a 20-minute lesson on how to, you know, shoot the hoop. And then I told them about what I was doing. And they were talking about what it's like to be a guy and to try and approach a woman. And then she blows you out and you've got to walk back to your friends. And we ended up having this really sweet, unexpected conversation where it felt like I was just the same as these young guys. So rejection therapy ended up in a lot of sweet encounters that I would have missed. And then also professionally, as a freelance journalist, I should have been approaching new publications all the time to write for, but I never had the confidence. I stuck to the people I knew, and I thought, oh, there's no point in approaching that magazine, they'll only say no. But in rejection therapy, I emailed every magazine in the land and I asked if one of them wanted to give me a regular column, which was audacious, I thought, and they ended up saying yes. So I got my first regular column because of being brave enough to ask for something that I thought was crazy, and it turned out not to be crazy.
We're talking with Marianne Power, journalist and writer. She spent more than 12 months reading and following the advice of different self-help books to see what would happen. Her new book is called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out If Self-Help Really Can Change Her Life.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you read self-help books? Is there a particular self-help book that had an impact, in a good way, on your life? Call in and share your favorite piece of advice from a self-help book at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue this conversation in just a bit right here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Darrell Connor. We're talking with Marianne Power, journalist and writer. She spent more than 12 months reading different self-help books for her new book called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out If Self-Help Really Can Change Her Life.
She tried putting these books into practice in her life. Have you ever done something like this? Call us at 800-642-1234. Are you a reader of a particular self-help book or multiple self-help books? What do you think of them? Are you, like our guest was, shy about letting people know that you read them? Have you ever tried to follow their advice? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Marianne, as you were working through these months, were there any books that really surprised you?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know about surprise. The one book that I found probably the trickiest was a book of angels, angel therapy. It's a book about how to talk to your guardian angels. And I was surprised. I went to see the author, Doreen Virtue, speak at an event, and she was so popular. So that was a book that I just wasn't really aware that there was such a following. I couldn't get on with it myself, but that was one that I was really blown away by how popular it was. And then another book that I actually loved and ended up being much deeper and more profound than I was expecting. I can't say its full title on air, but it's called Effort. And it's just about learning to care a lot less and to let go of things. And I found that a really fabulous book.
Did you find yourself liking a book that you didn't expect to like?
Oh, that's another good question. I did a dating book called Get the Guy by Matthew Hussey. And I, even though I'd read self-help by the mountain load, I'd never really read that many dating books because I thought that was too embarrassing. And I was surprised by Get the Guy and how practical and down to earth its advice was. And I actually think it's a really helpful book for anyone who's single and wants a bit of help in meeting people.
Now, we had a number of comments on Facebook, but one in particular, Barbara, left us a comment and said that, you know, self-help books can be useful, but only if you read the right one. It's not a one-size-fits-all fix. Did you find that to be the case, too?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, the angel therapy books just didn't click with me. But I know from the people I've spoken to at events that it can be a huge source of comfort for other people. So yeah, she's absolutely right. Some books will work for you, others won't. It can also be a case that, you know, you can pick up a book 1 year and it means nothing to you, and then you pick it up a few years later and for some reason then it really makes sense. And so, for example, The Power of Now was one of my favorite books, but I had tried to read that book several times years ago and I could never make sense of it. And for some reason, this time round, it just did make sense to me. So yes, she's absolutely right.
Did you find, and I want to talk about the book, The Power of Now, in just a second, but I wanted to ask you, in reading all of these books, did you find that most of them, if not all, basically centered on a common theme that was found in almost all the self-help books, or were they all just completely different in scope?
No, there's definitely similarities, and there are some core messages in a lot of them. And to me, those core messages often came down to trusting that things will go okay, and accepting yourself and loving yourself seems to be another common message. But then there were also contradictions. So I did a money book called Money, a Love Story, which is about how to get into control of your finances, which is really, again, a very realistic, helpful book that tells you to get clear on your bank statements and look at what you're spending. But then the next month I read The Secret, which encourages, you know, dreaming big, and you download pretend checks from The Secret website and fill it out for the amount you want. So yeah, there were some commonalities, but there was also contradictions.
Marianne Power is a journalist and writer. Her new book is called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out If Self-Help Really Can Change Her Life. You were talking about the book, The Power of Now, which is a book that's made Oprah's lists, made her picks, and been a big book club book. For the skeptics out there that think this one might feel a little too spiritual or serious for them, can you talk a little bit more about it and what it meant to you?
Yes, I would have been a skeptic. The last time I tried to read it, I think I gave up on page three. It was almost impenetrable the way it was written. So it is hard work, but it seems to be that if you get it at the right time, it can have quite a profound effect. So the book describes how if you see someone walking down the street and they're talking to themselves, we'll often think that they're a bit mad. But Eckhart Tolle, the author, says that we are all talking to ourselves all the time. We all have this voice in our head that's narrating everything we're doing. And it's often a very critical voice. And it will be criticizing, why did I say that? Why did I do that? And it will be worrying about what's going to happen in the future. And he says this voice takes us away from the only thing that's ever real and the only thing that will ever give us peace, which is to just be present in the moment that's happening right now. And he says that if you ask yourself, do I have a problem right now, this second? The answer is almost always no. So right now we're on the radio, I'm having this lovely conversation, you know, we're safe, we're fine, we're good. But it would also be possible to ruin this moment by whatever stories we have in our head. So the power of now is always just this, do I have a problem right now? And to just try and breathe and be in your body, look at the sky, look at the trees. If you're drinking a cup of coffee, really taste that coffee and just try and be in the moment, which is something that I would have rolled my eyes at before. I mean, I think we've all heard a lot about mindfulness and being in the moment. But reading this book, it really made sense and had a big impact on me.
In your book, you refer to this time in your life as a 12-month plan, but a 16-month roller coaster. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there was just a few months where the rejection therapy, I took an extra month, and then there was a month in August when I realized I had basically stopped doing my day job and was spending all my time and money on self-help and walking around the park repeating affirmations like I'm a money magnet instead of actually earning money. So then I had to take a month off to earn some money. And yeah, so there was lots of, I fell off the wagon a few times. And yeah, at one point, I think I think at one point it would have probably been sensible for me to stop, but I didn't want to. I really wanted to get to the end of the 12 books, and I'm very glad I did. But towards the end of the journey, so the last 4 months, I was doing my project in conjunction with seeing a therapist, and because I really realized actually I was putting myself through quite a lot, and I was poking around in my head in a way that I'd never done before, and I needed some help. And so I got through the last 4 books with the help of a therapist, which I'm really glad I did.
We have a couple minutes left, so I want to make sure that I ask you these questions before I let you go. I know you read the books, you made lists, you also attended seminars, and you even went to Italy for a retreat for one of these. How did it feel to be with a group of people trying to fix their problems in the same way as you?
I loved that. Yeah, I really loved that. And that was also one of the lessons. At the end of the year, Brené Brown, who is one of the authors that I followed, whose work I love, says that in an interview she said she doesn't like the term self-help because she doesn't think we're meant to do it on our own. She says we're meant to help each other. And I did find the times that I was in a group talking about the things that are bothering us or talking about what it is we want to happen, there was something about being in that group that was very powerful, and it had a great impact.
And finally, with about 30 seconds or so, did these self-help books, did it change your life overall? Would you recommend someone else doing this?
No, I wouldn't recommend anyone does what I did. But I think, I think there's a lot of wisdom in self-help, and I think they're a great place to get started. You know, it helps you look at your life and maybe see things a little bit differently. But I suppose one of the things I learned along the way was I thought I needed to change everything about myself. And as the year went on, I started to see that actually probably what I needed to do was accept myself more than change myself. So yes, read the books, there's wisdom and help in it, but people are probably doing pretty well already.
Marianne, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Marianne Power is a journalist and writer. Her new book is called Help Me, One Woman's Quest to Find Out if Self-Help Really Can Change Your Life.